Good afternoon, Scott Baker.
Mikey, how are you? October 1st, we're into a whole new month.
Yes, absolutely. And it is Conversation 99 that we're having today.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're too young to remember 99 Luftballons, the hit from the early 80s. You'll have to look that one up.
Okay.
Yeah, it does exist. Yeah, a very few number of people will remember that one. So our field note for today, though, is about leaders who veto decisions. And here on Lead Better, we then unpack these. And that I think that actually in the execution of this field note, it wasn't quite a veto, but I was a little unclear on a part. And we decided to go with it how it's done. Right. Yeah. So I kind of raise questions, but then we'll walk ourselves back up to it. I'm still a little unclear, and maybe you can then walk me through it. But have you, I don't know that, I'm trying to think if I've ever been on a team where I executed a veto against the will of the group. And I was really trying to remember if I've been in a team where the leader executed a veto. I've certainly been on teams where people are more authoritarian, for better or worse. Sometimes I think that actually works well, but I don't know. Have you experienced that?
We've had a veto. I remember a college group I was a part of where a veto was handed down to us, but it didn't come from our leader.
Right. Yeah.
It came from higher up from her. And that was a discouraging thing to be able to get it because the rest of us had reached consensus.
You were excited. Yeah.
And then this nameless, faceless administrator basically handed down. And then, so we didn't even have the opportunity to vilify the one administrator who would have been like, it was like all of administration became evil to us for handing
because
down
of that
veto to us. But it is interesting. I don't know.
And by the way, the point of the field note, because you still remember and clearly have some unresolved resentment over this decades later is the point, right?
Yes.
So the field note is saying that some leaders can't either help themselves. They just have to get involved. Now there are legitimate reasons to have a veto, but there's a lot of times where it's just like, I'm going to have the final say here, but there are a lot of ramifications to that. So that the good leaders always know that regardless, a veto should be something very rare.
Yes. And this field note builds on like yesterday and past week's discussions over consensus building and how that decision making should be made. And at some point, you know, if consensus is starting to form around a direction that the leader really doesn't want to go into, there are times where a veto is like, well, I'm the one who's in charge. I'm ultimately the decider, right?
Yeah.
So of course I can exercise a veto power anytime. But anytime you're publicly talking about how your veto power works and whether or not you could, it's probably evidence of the fact that your leadership, your approach to be able to managing people and decision making probably has some holes in it.
If you feel right.
You have to let everybody know how your veto power works and when you can and can't exercise it.
Well, and letting everybody know is the thing that the field note makes clear, that every time you do use a veto, that then you are sending a message. Now, we think of the word veto, we think of it in terms of government or a presidential veto or something that says, you know, I've seen what, you know, Congress has sent to me, but I'm saying no, that there's a different way of looking at it. And obviously, even in an organization where this is kind of happening, I think even average leaders would realize there's probably some downside to kind of just, you know, banging the gavel. And, you know, yet we do see it happen. And so what you're communicating is at some level the disdain for the decision that was made. Mm-hmm. And it also does say something about, well, if everybody got to that conclusion, how persuasive were you? Like, was your case insufficient, or did you just do a bad job explaining it?
Right. No, and it's probably based on people not knowing what your strong preferences are, because we're in an organization where we know what our team leader has some very strong preferences.
Sure.
And they have no problem letting us know what those strong preferences are. And so there's certain areas, certain collaborations mm-hmm. that we wouldn't suggest, certain people that we wouldn't suggest doing collaboration, where even if I thought, hey, from a marketing and from a buzz point of view, the potential of going viral online, this would be a fantastic thing. Let me go ahead and suggest that. Like, I wouldn't even begin to suggest it because I kind of already know where his veto power would come in.
And yeah, so right.
If I know that because of the way that he's talking and I'm still suggesting it, then my guess is that that suggestion would actually be taken a little more seriously because he already knows how strongly he's communicating his veto power, right?
Yeah, right.
So if I'm going to suggest it anyway, then he might actually pause and consider it. So it's an odd kind of dynamic that we're talking about, but really most of whether or not we're using that veto power is based upon how well that dynamic has been fleshed out in your organization.
Sure. So. Well, and there is another side that's not fully addressed in the field note, which is, well, you're on the team. You've made your case. The leader has said, nope, we're going to go do this. You still think it's a bad idea. We had a field note that kind of talked about some of this the other day about what do you do with somebody on your team that's just resisting the direction that, you know, that's going. So in this, there's a lot of stuff that happens in organizations all the time. I think the question here is, you know, well, what can we make as sort of our operating principle? And the field note kind of takes us to this idea that if the team has come and they've kind of given their recommendation and, you know, I might have to overrule this, that the good leaders go that one extra step. So they actually go back and say, all right, you've made your case. I know I delegated this out to the team. I would like you to withdraw that decision. I would like you to reconsider this, and puts that option back to them first to invite further discussion, further exploration. Now we talked the other day about, you know, this is not about dragging out deadlines, because we already talked about decision timelines the other day, and that there needs to be a framework. Every decision has a clock, but in that case, the team then has that moment to say, "How sure are we?" And they may say, "You know, you're right. I think you made a good point about that. Let's go back and relook at that." But the team might also come back and say, I think we kind of like our decision.
Yeah. Well, you know, A players are those that have the goal, the strategy, and the tactics that they can execute on without any direction. B players are the people that they can understand the goal and the strategy, but maybe they'll need help with the tactics.
Right.
And then C players, you know, they need help with all three.
Yeah.
So if we're dealing with A players and you actually do trust them to execute on both the strategy and the tactics, usually where this would come up is the fact that not that you've got a strategy disagreement, but that it's a choice that they've made tactically as to how they're going to accomplish something. And that's right. Where preferences really do kind of bother people. And so this gets into our whole thing about whether or not we should micromanage people or not, right?
Yeah.
The tactics are where people get frustrated that they're being micromanaged. And if you know that you're an A player and it's been talked about, like, this is how we think about A, B, and C players. And so I know that I'm trusted to do the tactics. I have the goal. I have the strategy. Here's the tactic. You don't like the tactic because of a personal reason, right? But it actually fits so well with the strategy and the goal that I need you to understand that this tactic is something that I can execute on and I'd like to move forward with, right? And I know you can veto it. So, you know, is it just a personal reason or do you not have, you know, confidence in my, suddenly you don't have confidence in my ability to be able to accomplish it? Or is it that every once in a while you just feel like exercising a veto power, right? So is it ego driven? Like, what's the deal here?
And that the field note, that's kind of the warning at the beginning. Some leaders are just like that. Now, what you would hope is that because of all the dynamics you just described, that there'd be very few of these situations anyway, because if the consequence, because we're indicating that a leader might use a veto, in a serious situation that right. where they think that it could really cost, you know, financial problems with the bank that maybe everybody doesn't understand, or there's some real relationships with key customers that the leader gets the nuance but hasn't been able to fully explain, right. you know, that maybe there are some legal implications, you know, for something that they see, or we're going to lose the entire, you know, South African continent if we don't get into, you know, into this in the right way, whatever that is, that it's really serious. Now, if that's the case, the leader probably should not have delegated that decision to say, you guys just come up with it, right?
Right.
The leader should say, I'm going to be deeply involved in this all the way along,
right?
Right.
Right.
And if the leader senses there's a problem, it shouldn't be popping up at this last moment where it's like veto, right?
Right.
Veto, and that's why the machinations of government and subcommittees and floor votes and House votes and Senate votes and all of this stuff and government shutdowns, these all things go at sort of this sort of dinosaur-like pace before you even get to that point. And so you might say a veto is a nuclear option because that's how we actually think of it. Are we at the risk of nuclear war? You know, I might need to step in and veto something if I think we're actually on the precipice of a nuclear war, right? Yeah. So that's the truth of that. So I would say that a leader that finds themselves encountering this, where they're kind of having to throw it back to the team and then asking the team to withdraw decisions, you not only have a persuasion problem, you have a real judgment problem about the kind of decisions that you're delegating to people. You do need to be delegating or they're not going to get good at this. And you need to actually live with decisions that are not perfectly comfortable for you
right.
before you get to this point.
Yeah. Okay. So the more common time that this might come up is probably inside of relationships and in families, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so don't be fooled with the idea that just because you are the quote unquote leader of a social group or a family, that makes you the decider, right?
Yeah.
That's a silly way to look at it, right? Building consensus and making that final decision, and even whoever it is that makes that final choice, oftentimes that should be delegated as well, because those are development opportunities for other people mm-hmm. to be able to kind of put the final stamp on that. So these veto opportunities should be quite rare for you to exercise. And so I had one come up with a discussion with my wife on how many dogs we should foster, right?
Okay.
And so we've got this natural dynamic in our relationship where I'm not in charge of her. She's not in charge of me. We're both adults. We both have interests. She's mm-hmm. clearly more interested in the foster dog, you know, interaction in our family than I am, right?
She does not get into the Lego conversations that deeply.
No, she participates, but she's not passionate the way that I am. Right.
Right? Yes,
and,
right.
And it's the same way. Like I participate with the foster dogs, but not in terms of, so we had this understanding that we had, two spots for personal dogs in the house and one spot for a foster dog.
Okay. That's it. Three
that
spots.
Spot
that's the, yeah.
Was going to rotate. And if we ever foster failed, then which means that you adopt your foster dog because you fall too much in love with it, right? That's called a foster fail.
Interesting.
Then that would be a third spot, but then you're basically saying you can't foster anymore.
Another, you can't go to four.
You right. can't go to four, right?
Unless you kill one of them.
Right. right
then exactly. you're not going to, that defeats the point. Yeah.
So we were used to fostering medium to large sized dogs. And she said to me, the rescue that I work for is actually in need of somebody to take care of two of these smaller dogs that are.
So does two small dogs equal exactly. one?
Right. So she had all kinds of like machinations around it. And it basically, and okay. I didn't want to break that rule. I wanted to kind of keep mm-hmm. it. And there was a thought for a moment that's like, I want to uh-huh. use my veto power on this. Like as an equal partner in this relationship, I could do that. But I didn't say that. I said, listen, we're both adults about this thing. If you want to change the standard that we set up about two regular spots and one foster spot, you just need to announce that you would like to expand another
We'd like,
foster
right.
spot.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Instead of pretending like you need to come to me for permission. And it's this weird dynamic because in sure. a partnership like that, she does need permission and I could veto power, but it's, I don't okay. want to even talk about it that way.
I need to know now, because I also have to deliver on the one promise I made at the beginning to finish the point that I was going to make about the veto in this field yeah. note itself. are we getting the two small dogs? What's where did we land?
So we now have two foster spots.
Ah, okay. All right. We've reopened it.
And I don't prefer it. And she knows that I don't prefer it, but I'm also not saying I'm going to exercise. Like there's all kinds of reasons that if I'm going to exercise veto power,
right.
This is not the thing to do it on. Right.
Yeah. All right. So here's my question for you. So in this field note, it talks about the leader going the step farther, asking the team to withdraw their decision. And then here's the sentence. If they are reluctant, the leader refrains from the veto, right? Meaning they come back and they go, no, we're good. And the leader's like, okay. Now the leader hasn't actually threatened a veto, I wouldn't think, in this case. It's just saying, look, I don't really like this decision. I'd like you to withdraw this and let's go. My argument is this. Now, I do like the point that the field note makes that a team that does say withdraw a decision, you go back in, now there's a deeper engagement. The dynamics could actually be good. It could even be good in a family. Right. It could be an opportunity for a real reconsideration, a better understanding of people's perspectives. And so then it comes to this issue. Vetoes are a last stand against harm. Yeah. And that is true, even in the research. Right. So there are in all kinds of circumstances in research around vetoes, even in structural hierarchies like the military, where it becomes normative. You actually just expect the person in command from time to time to be like, nope, we're doing this. And if there's not time to explain, you just be like, I know that I have to trust this leader because they've seen more things than I have.
Yep.
And you're not holding it against them. It's not a big touchy-feely, but we decided this and we decided. No, it's like, no, this is the way it is. And this is what I signed up for. And okay. Right. Like even in business, I knew a very high-level leader in the media who worked for very high-level personalities on and still does. And I think had a real approach of I execute what they want. I will sometimes point out options, but I never actually argue against with the person that owns the company. I might give them advice, but if they say we're doing this, even if I think it's a disaster, that guy would just go ahead and do it. And if it was a disaster, well, then the person that owned the company knew that it was their disaster, right? He was just executing what they wanted them to do. Now, to me, where I got a little confused in the field note was we go from this point of we're going to refrain from the veto. And then we kind of say, yeah, it could strengthen the dynamic. And then it's like, okay, but now vetoes are a last stand against harm. Now a leader has to kind of take this decision and a gamble on why they're going to actually do the veto. But I felt like there was a jump there that I didn't quite get. Like we were at refraining a veto, and now we're actually kind of coming back in and saying, well, we're going to do the veto, right? Now, maybe the field note is clear enough on that point. It wasn't quite clear enough to me how we switched back into veto mode when we had actually just said refrain from the veto. Now, I raised this point. You can only do so much in a couple of paragraphs. And I said, do we need something else here? And the discussion was, no, it kind of means what it means. I was like, okay. So I was cool with it. I raised my feeling that maybe there needed to be a little more explanation. And I kind of edited some pieces that I thought would help. But we left it like it was, right? So the person that wrote the field note was like, no, I kind of like it like this. And I was like, okay,
right,
totally fine, right? So there was, I raised an objection and you know, or a different, you know, view of how to articulate that. But I don't know that my view would have necessarily been better. You know, it might have been too wordy, right? So we actually, in the veto field note, we went with the original sort of concept as it was.
But the discussion there was about clarity, not not staving off disaster, right?
So yeah, correct. There's not a lot of risk here that field note readers are going to be like, well, I saw that field note and therefore I decided to not make this veto and I lost my entire company.
Right. But like if you were going to say like you choosing to use P. Diddy as an exemplary here in this field note is something that I really think you should reconsider, right?
Yes. And so, real danger.
Right. And that might be something as like the third line editor, like I might just go ahead and like secretly veto it without, you know, the author being able to know that he could fix it or not, right?
Yep, right.
So I know that we are long. We are 4 minutes long, but there is an important question here that comes in the comments. What happens when your manager vetoes your decision in front of your team? How do you handle that? And then with a tag, she is always undermining my decisions, right?
Ooh.
That's not a function of vetoes, right? That's not, that's really, there's an ego thing going on.
Right.
There's a control thing that's going on. So you've got more that you're considering than just how to handle your leader's veto power here, right?
Yeah. Well, and everybody has something to shoulder here, we could explore this, we'll fit this into another discussion, but that's a problem on the leader's part. There may be things that you can do to think procedurally about how you lead up before we get to those situations. The way that you go extra on clarifying things going in, you want us to do this. What are other factors? Where are we going to be on this? Here's where the update was. Here's where our advocacy is. Here are where you're building in a more thorough case. No downside to you. You get better. You get, like, once you're in charge, you'll actually be more thorough. So there may be some things that we're saying, well, look, the leader that the field notes addressed to, sounds like her, has some real shortcomings in terms of decision judgment and procedural judgment and persuasive judgment. And we can all get better in how we do that, persuading up as well.
Right. Okay. That, or you could hit the share button at the bottom of this post and address it.
Secretly send it. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Great. All right. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate your time today.
Bye. Thanks, everybody.